Hi, everybody. My name is Rob Mason. I'm an alcoholic. By the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the program of recovery I found in this book, I've not found it necessary to take a drink since the 7th of July, 1988. For that, I'm extremely grateful. It is good to be here today, and I'm going to be a little bit lost here today because my regular book is in Texas, getting rebound. I've been threatening to do that for over 10 years. I finally did it. So I'm using a book that does not have all my bookmarks, my notes, or anything else in it. So I'm going to be a little bit lost today. So I'm just warning you in advance, if I'm a little slow, that's why. All right? All right, let me get myself situated here with this new book that hasn't been used. All right. All right. Everybody, let's open to page 89. This is the last of a 10-week, it's actually been 12 weeks because we took a break for Easter and a break for Mother's Day. And today, we are going to kind of encapsulate everything we've been talking about for the last 9 sessions in the culmination of what happens as a result of this course of action. And now that my... Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. Let's have a moment of silence and a prayer. Lord, help me to set aside everything I think I know about you. Everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about my fellows, and everything I think I know about my own recovery. All for a new experience in you, Lord, a new experience in myself, a new experience in my fellows, and a much needed new experience in my own recovery. Amen. All right. Thank you very much, Kathy. So now that my problem through the first 11 steps has been removed, okay? And that's what it told us in the 10th step promise. Our problem has been removed. Okay? We've tapped into this power greater than ourselves. We have entered the world of the Spirit. This insanity of alcohol has left us. Sanity will have been returned. Right? All of these things happen. We know a new freedom and a new happiness. Right? The problem has been completely taken care of. Right? So my problem now has been removed from me. Okay? And now that that's happened as a result of the first 11 steps, now I have the opportunity to turn my attention to what really the whole purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous is, right? Remember the AA mission statement on page 77? Though we're trying to put our own lives in order, that is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people around us. That's the whole purpose of this whole thing, right? Now, if they had told me that at the beginning, I don't know if I'd have done it, right? Because I'm a self-centered guy. You know? And oftentimes I hear people, they work the first 11 steps, right? And really, up to this point, it's really all about me. And I like that, right? It's really all about me. It's about my, how many meetings am I going to? It's about me working on myself. You know what I mean? It's about me looking inside me. You know? And so really, it's a self-glamorizing proposition for some of us, right? Although it's painful, it's still about me, you know. But now I get to the 12th step, and now I've got to think about you. And that's not very, I don't do that very well, you know. I didn't for a long time in sobriety. Because a lot of us, what we do is we trade drunken self-centeredness for sober self-centeredness, and we call that sobriety. But I'm here to report that that has not been my experience. Because for me, self-centeredness will inevitably lead me back to the bottle, one way or another, one way or another. So I've got to find a new way of life that includes thinking of someone outside of me, right? And to develop a life of service. And that's what we're really going to talk about today. So the question is, now that I have found this new power, right? We found a new power in the third step. It said, you know, we've begun to tap into this power. It says, talks about in the 11th step, as we felt this new power flow in and we got this new sense of power. Now, what am I going to use that power so I can place myself to be of maximum service? You want to notice in the 12th step that the 12th step, hi Julie, has 3 distinct parts. And the first part contains what I believe is the greatest promise in Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Now, I want to point out what it doesn't say. It does not say having had a spiritual awakening as one result of these steps, or as some result, or as a result. No, it says that the result of these steps that I am guaranteed is nothing more and nothing less than a spiritual awakening, right? What a great promise, right? And I'm here to tell you, that was my experience. My experience was that somewhere in this process, the spirit within me became awakened, right? And we know that a spiritual awakening, for those of you who maybe have not been to all these sessions, we talked about it in chapter 2. We went to the appendix in the back of the book on spiritual experience. We found out that a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience is nothing more than a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. That's what it is. Okay? And somehow, by working these steps, we get an incremental spiritual experience. Right? A little bit at a time, I become awakened to the presence and the power and the purpose and the direction of God in my life. And that's what happened for me. And when that happened, I became a transformed person. The third step says we were reborn. And really, truly, that has been my experience. And what validates that experience for me every single time is when I take a new man or woman through the steps and I see the exact same thing happen in their life. Right? When all of a sudden I see the lights go on for the first time, right? And they get it. They move from the darkness into the light, the 12 by 12 says. That is the greatest experience that I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the greatest things I believe that you can do in life is take a man or a woman who's lost and help them by taking some actions to find their God, right? And to become a spiritual being once more, right? What a great feeling that is, you know? And I'll tell you, that's what keeps me coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous again and again and again, is not just a sense of duty and obligation, but the joy that I feel in doing that, right? Because someone took the time to do that for me, asking nothing in return from me, right? So, what does a spiritual experience look like? I always get that question. Well, how do you know if you've had a spiritual experience? Anybody here ever been electrocuted? Anybody? When you got done getting electrocuted, did you say to yourself, I wonder if I just got electrocuted, right? Most of the time, when you get electrocuted, you know, okay? You may not know it right away, that you may pass out, but after you wake up, you probably know, okay? And I'm here to tell you, if you sit there and you wonder whether you've had a spiritual awakening, I hate to tell you, you probably have not, okay? Because let me tell you something. If you've had a spiritual awakening, the real deal, what they're talking about in this book, there is no question that you are a changed person. And oftentimes, it's not you that notices it first. It's the people around you that notice it, right? It's the people around you who you are now not screwing up their life anymore, right? Right? You know what I'm saying? He's laughing. He knows what I'm talking about. Right? Or they'll say things real spiritual like, you know, you're not as much of an asshole as you used to be. Right? Now that's growth for a guy like me. Right? That's a step in the right direction. Okay? But a little at a time, I become aware that this spiritual experience has taken place. Hand me that 12 by 12 right there. The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book gives us a little bit of definition about what a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening looks like. And I like this definition, okay? If you don't have your 12 by 12, that's fine. You could check it when you get home. This is on page 106. I just want to read this very quickly because for me it kind of describes, although everyone's spiritual experience may be a little bit different, they all have certain things in common. Okay, that's been my experience. And it said, maybe there are as many definitions of a spiritual awakening as there are people who have had them, but certainly each genuine one has something in common with all the others. And these things that they have in common are not too hard to understand. When a man or woman has a spiritual awakening, the most important meaning of it is that he has now become able to do, feel, and believe that which he could not do before on his own unaided strength and resources. He has been granted a gift, which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He has been set on a path which tells him that he is really going somewhere, that life is not a dead end, not something to be endured or mastered. In a very real sense, he has been transformed because he has laid hold of a source of strength which in one way or another he has hitherto denied himself. He finds himself in possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, and love, of which he had thought himself quite incapable. What he has received is a free gift, and yet usually in some small part he has made himself ready to receive it. Listen, newcomers, AA's manner of making ready to receive this gift lies in the practice of the 12 steps of our program, right? So the spiritual awakening I receive is a gift. It's a gift from God. You know, what I do in these workshops, and people come up and they thank me for doing these workshops, and I appreciate that. I really do. But all I'm doing is planting, right? God is the one that grows, right? I don't give the growth, you know. I just plant, you know. And then maybe your sponsor waters, but God's the one that causes the growth, right? And that's really true. But what I have to do is make myself ready to receive this gift, right? This grace. And how do I do that? I do that by applying these simple principles in my life, right? And I'm here to tell you, like it says on page 58, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, right? I've never yet seen anybody who thoroughly followed this path that has failed, right? I've seen lots of people thoroughly fail to do it, but I've never thoroughly seen anybody follow this path who has failed to get sober and stay that way, right? All right, page 89. By the way, how many people here have had a spiritual awakening or spiritual experience? Okay? Wow. I wonder if everyone in this room could be wrong. I doubt it, right? I doubt it. Remember, a common solution produces a common effect back in chapter 2? I said a common solution produces a common effect. And you just saw all the hands in this. Raise those hands again. You see all these people, they've all had the same effect by working these steps. So if you're here and you're new and you have not yet worked these steps, let that be an example to you. An example of the power of the solution of the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. All right, page 89. You know, there are some people that will tell you that there's no such thing as sponsorship mentioned in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? Anybody ever heard that stuff? Anybody ever heard that stuff? Okay, nothing could be further from the truth. Okay? As a matter of fact, they give us a whole chapter on it. It's called Working with Others. Right? What do you call that? I call that sponsorship, right? That's what I call it, okay? Sponsorship. Now, why don't they use the word sponsor in the book Alcoholics Anonymous? Remember that in 1939, the book is the 12-step call, okay? So you'd send your $3.50 and you'd get a copy of the big book in the mail, okay? Now, what if you got to the third step and you're in, I don't know, Miami, right? And there's not another AA member within 100 miles of you. Maybe 200, maybe 1,000, okay? And it says, okay, get with your sponsor, get down on your knees and do the third step prayer. Are you going to be able to do it? No, you're not, okay? Remember, they didn't write this book for themselves. They wrote it for us, okay? And this book needed to contain all we needed to make a beginning on this program. So they didn't use the word sponsor, although the concept of sponsorship runs throughout the book. And we're going to see that as we go through this right here today, okay? Now, notice that it says practical experience. Everybody circle that or highlight that, okay? How do I learn how to sponsor? Practical experience, okay? I've seen a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some have been sober a long time. They come up to me and they say, well, I've never sponsored anybody. I don't think I'm ready. And my answer is simply this. If you wait till you're ready to do things in Alcoholics Anonymous, you will die of alcoholism, okay? The only way that I learn how to sponsor is by sponsoring. That's it, okay? And fortunately for me, they give me a manual on how to do that. You'll remember a couple weeks ago I said in the big book, where they write short, we work short. And where they write long, we work long. Everybody remember that? Okay. Well, they've just covered steps 3 through 11 in two chapters, okay? And now they give us an entire chapter dedicated to working with other people, to sponsorship, okay? I wonder how important that is, right? They cover steps 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 in two chapters, and then they dedicate an entire chapter to the 12th step. What that tells me is that the founders of our program found this principle of getting out of self and developing a life of service very important, okay? Now, let's talk about practical experience for a second. Where did they get this practical experience, okay? Well, I can tell you when Bill was writing the big book, he was no dummy, okay? And the group that had the highest rate of recovery at that time, remember there's three groups in the world, a group in Akron, a group in Cleveland, a group in New York, was the Cleveland group, okay? They had a 92% rate of recovery in the Cleveland group, okay? So when Bill went to write this chapter, he called old Clarence Snyder And he said, Clarence, I would like to talk to you about what's going to go into this chapter, because we obviously want to be able to transmit the best way for people to get sober, right? And so Clarence, and I want to read this to you, because they had a little plan of some things they were doing in Cleveland. And this is out of AA Comes of Age. It says, it was soon evident that a scheme of personal sponsorship would have to be devised for the new people. Each prospect was assigned an older AA who visited him at his home or in the hospital, instructed him on AA principles, and conducted him to his first meeting. In the face of many hundreds of pleas for help, the supply of elders could not possibly meet the demand. Brand new AAs sober only a month or a week were sponsoring alcoholics still drying up in the hospitals. Goes on to say, the Cleveland pioneers proved three essential things. Here's their three-part plan. Number one, the worth of the AA book in indoctrinating newcomers. Two, the value of personal sponsorship. And three, the tremendous fact that AA, when word really got around, could really grow to great size. Okay, their group in Cleveland was blowing up. Okay, the growth in Akron and New York was relatively slow at that time by comparison. But the group in Akron went from 50 to 100 to 150 to 200 very quickly. Okay, why? They had a scheme of personal sponsorship. So you didn't get to pick your sponsor back in those days, right? You'd go to a meeting, and they'd say, well, who do we think should be Kathy's sponsor here? And they'd say, well, who do we have here that, number one, needs somebody to work with, and number two, has maybe the same background and the same challenges, the same problems that Kathy might have, right? And they'd say, okay, congratulations, this is so-and-so, they're going to be your sponsor. You didn't get to choose, okay? You didn't get to choose. And that's how they did things back then. I wonder how much more successful AA would be today if we still did that kind of stuff, right? If we encouraged very diplomatically someone to work with someone else, right, rather than giving them their choice. Because I don't know about any of you, when I first got here, they told me, get a sponsor you can what? Relate to, right? And so I look for someone just as sick as me, right? And you see, if I get someone I can relate to and I'm a newcomer, we're both very sick, aren't we, right? So I had to find someone I could not relate to at all, right? And I did. I found someone that I thought would be my friend, but eventually I would learn to obey, right? And that's what I did. I needed someone to give me direction. Because remember, a sponsor takes us in a direction we are unable to go ourselves, okay? And I think that's the job of a sponsor, to take me in a direction I'm unable to go myself. Goes on to say, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Everybody underline that, intensive work. Not just work, intensive work. Very interesting, right? Keep your finger there and turn back to the forward to the second edition on page XVII. XVII. And we'll start at the top of the bottom of page XVI, last two lines. This seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous work, everybody see that? Strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery, life-sustaining. Okay? Let's look in Bill's story real quickly. And let's look at page 14. Bottom paragraph. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly, it was imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for an alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Right? Back on page 89. So they're talking about strenuous work. They're talking about intensive work. They're talking about work and self-sacrifice. I'm getting a common theme here, right? And the common theme here is that I must work with others if I want to stay sober. It goes on to say, it works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry the message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, old-timers, they are very ill. I think I forget that sometimes, right? I think I forget that. I've been in meetings where there's been a drunk guy stumble in and people have told him to leave, right? Or to shut up, right? I have to remember that they're very ill. Boy, I'm glad no one did that to me when I was new, right? I may have never came back, right? I may have been so humiliated that I might never come back to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Anybody here ever seen a well person walk through the doors of an AA meeting? Who here came to AA on the best day of their life? Anyone? I certainly didn't. I crawled through the doors of AA time after time, and nobody told me not to come back, right? They said, you need to do some things, right? But we love you. It's okay. You don't have to live this way anymore. It's your choice. But if you want what we got, you got to do what we did, right? Thank God they did that. I must remember that the new people are ill. I was talking with somebody I sponsored this week, and we were talking about AA knuckleheads. You all know who AA knuckleheads are, don't you? Right? They're those people that just bug the hell out of you in a meeting, right? They just bug you, right? And we all have people like that, right? We all have people, you know, it's personalities, right? That, you know, I don't love everyone in AA. I try to. I try to treat them with love and tolerance. The book says I can't be helpful to all people, right? I try to take a kindly and tolerant view to each and every one. But sometimes there are just people that, you know, and, you know, they're kind of, you know, the book says on page 25 that, you know, we lay the simple kit of spiritual tools that are laid at our feet, which is secretly where I believed all of you belonged, was at my feet. You know what I mean? When I got here, you know? And I know when I get blocked off from God, that's where you all end up again. You know what I mean? You all end up sort of down here, and I'm sort of a little bit above the average alcoholic in AA. Right? I know none of you have ever had that experience, right? And the key thing for me to remember is that when I'm like that, it's not them. I'm the knucklehead, right? I'm the one with the problem. They're doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, right? And who am I to judge my own sick brother, right? See, it's my judgment. It's never about them. It's always been between me and God. That's where the battle's always been. It goes on to say in the next paragraph, life will take on a new meaning. I wonder how important that is. What a great promise. Life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and each other is the bright spot of our lives. Notice it does not say occasional contact with newcomers and each other. It says frequent contact. See, I must be in contact with people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I must be in contact with new people. As a matter of fact, I spend a lot more time working with new people and working with the people I sponsor than I do talking about working with new people. Okay? And that is important for me. It is important for me to keep that in balance, and here's why. Because I cannot share experience that I don't have. Right? I can't. I can try, but you all know better than that. Right? You all know better than that. Right? So, the second part of this 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening, we tried to carry this message. What is the first requirement if I am going to carry this message? That's part of it, okay? But I have to know what this message is, don't I? Right? If I'm going to carry this message, I have to know what this message is, don't I? I have to have an understanding of the message that I'm going to carry, don't I? So what is this message that we're talking? Because it doesn't say carry my message. It doesn't say carry a message. It doesn't say carry some message, does it? It says I'm supposed to carry this message. Keep your finger right there on page 89 and turn to page 17. Bottom paragraph. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out upon which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news or the great message that this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism, right? So what is this message? This message is that as a result of the program of recovery I found in this book, I've had a spiritual experience. That's the message, right? And that is the only message that I share with people that I work with, really, in one form or another, right? It's always about that, though, that this solution provided me a spiritual experience, and therefore I no longer have to drink. The obsession to drink has been removed. Back on page 89. So what the book is telling us is if I want to carry this message, I have to have a clear understanding of what this message is. Let me ask a question. Can I transmit what I don't have? You see, you can't transmit, think about this for a second, you can't transmit what you don't have any more than you can come back from someplace you've never been. Right? And that really is true. Right? But I see people trying to do it all the time. Right? They try to transmit things that they don't have. If I haven't had a spiritual experience, can I transmit that to you? No. If I don't have a clear understanding of the principles of recovery, can I transmit that to another person? I can want to. I can have the best intentions in the world, can I? Right? But if I don't have a clear understanding of the precise, specific, and clear-cut directions that are outlined in this book, there is no way that I can transmit that to another person. Another concept to think about, there's a big difference between having a spiritual awakening yourself and showing someone else how to do it. Right? Does that make sense? Big difference. Big difference between working the program yourself and being successful in taking someone else through the steps, right? I've talked to a lot of people over the years about sponsorship, and I was working with this one guy that I sponsored actually for a while, and he said, well, I'm sponsoring this guy, and here's what I have him doing. And I said, well, why do you have him doing that, you know? And he said, well, I just thought it might be a good idea, right? And I said, well, that's not how you were sponsored. You were taken right through the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, yeah, but this was just something I came up with on my own, right? And I think a lot of times that's what we do, right? I inject my opinion and my thought process and my thinking into the process of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's not what the book tells me to do, does it? It says I'm supposed to carry this message, not my message, right? I'm not going to cloud or distort the message by putting in things that I think should be in there or taking out things that I don't like, right? You see, my job is to carry an adequate message to the people that I sponsor. Not a perfect one, thankfully, but an adequate one, right? And I think that's where we sometimes miss it, because I believe one of the jobs of a sponsor, one of the most important jobs for those of you who are sponsoring, how many people here are sponsoring, by the way? A lot of people. I think one of the most important jobs of a sponsor is to show the people they sponsor how to sponsor. Okay, I don't sponsor people who don't sponsor. Okay, and I give them very specific direction on how to work with other people to be the most successful, right? And it's right out of this book. And I think sometimes that's where we miss the boat, is we take them through the first 11. And as I shared with you earlier, you know, I know lots of people who work the first 11 steps. They're doing great. And then they don't really want to work with other people, right? I had a guy who was the best man at my wedding, one of my best friends. And he was one of those guys, you know? He was one of those guys. He got involved in a lot of different stuff, and that was great. But he really didn't feel comfortable working with new people. He didn't like it, you know? The book tells us six times we're going to drink again if we don't work with new people, right? If we don't sponsor, if we don't get out of self. It's vital to permanent recovery, right? But he wouldn't do it. It's almost like you find this new source of power, right? You find this great new source of power, this great God, this great light, and you get all this, so you're really excited about it, and so you go out to the hardware store, and you get all these wires and bulbs, and you attach this power to this light bulb, right? But you don't flip the switch, right? You see, I believe, my experience has been, that the 12th step is the switch we flip in Alcoholics Anonymous that turns on the power of this program, right? And it helps me remove self, right? It's the actualizing factor in removing self in my life, right? And so if you're sponsoring, remember that it's important, okay? And this is my opinion, but it's important that you show the people you sponsor how to work with new people, right? I was fortunate that I had a sponsor that when I got my first new guy, he said, you call me. And I did. And he said, okay, first you have him do this, and then call me. And I did. He said, okay, now you have him do that. And if he had a question that I didn't know the answer to, I said the three words alcoholics don't like to say. I don't know. But I know somebody who does, and I would call my sponsor and I'd ask him. And if he didn't know, he'd call his sponsor, right? And that's how I learned through practical experience how to work with new people, right? It's very simple, very simple. All right, bottom of page 89, they're going to begin to tell me where I can find some people. Now, you know, here's the funny thing. People always say, I get some guys that I sponsor, they say, well, I don't know where to find any new people. And I say, well, here's a clue for you. There's 500 AA meetings in Central Florida every week, and the place is crawling with alcoholics. You know what I mean? Just crawling with them, right? I mean, we get tons and tons of new people here. So if you're here and you can't find an alcoholic, come see me. I'll find you some, okay? I will find you some alcoholics, all right? It says, perhaps you are not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. You can easily find some by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or hospitals. They will be only too glad to assist you. Don't start out as an evangelist or reformer. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists. You'll be handicapped if you arouse it. Ministers and doctors are competent. You can learn much from them if you wish. But it happens that because of your own drinking experience, you can be uniquely useful to alcoholics. Listen to this. This is, for me, has become sort of the credo of my life. Really. So cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is your only aim. I've used that in more areas than just working with alcoholics in my life, right? That for me is kind of my mission statement, to cooperate, never criticize, to be helpful is my only aim. And how do I apply that? Am I being the producer of confusion or the producer of harmony, right? In my job, in my marriage, with my kids, right? In Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, I'm one of those guys that I like a good controversy. Any controversy lovers here, right? If you go to a business meeting, if you want to see controversy, okay? If you want to see controversy, go to a business meeting, right? And I'm here to tell you, I don't like that stuff anymore, you know? I don't like that stuff. I don't need to argue, you know? I can give you the right to be wrong, and that's okay. I can level with you without leveling you, you know? I don't have to level you. I don't have to degrade you or demean you, right? We can agree to disagree, and that's okay. It doesn't mean I'm right or wrong. It just means we have a difference of opinion. That's okay. So my job is to cooperate and never criticize, to try to be helpful, to bring something positive to the situation, right? How do I do? I don't always do real well. I don't always do real well. I make mistakes. Fortunately, I have a 10th step that I can clean that stuff up, and I can try to do better today than I did yesterday, right? Now, if you go to the hospital and say, hey, I'm from Alcoholics Anonymous, like a few drunks, let me tell you, they're probably going to call security, okay? You know why? Because you know what they do if they have somebody who's a drunk? Guess where they send them? They send them to treatment or they send them to AA, right? They send them to AA, right? But let me tell you, and this is my pitch for service, there are 20% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that do 90% of the work, okay? That go to treatment centers, that go to jail, that go to detox, okay? That do that kind of stuff, okay? And if you want to stay sober and you're new, if you're less than a year, okay, let me tell you, the people that I have known over the years that have stayed sober are the people who are consistently in service, that are sponsored, that are working the steps, okay? I've always been in service since the day I came in. And guess what? I've always stayed sober, right? Now, maybe that's just some weird coincidence, okay? But it's a weird coincidence for a lot of people I know, okay? So you can find some drunk. You know what? I know that this group right here takes meetings to jails, takes meetings to detox, takes meetings to treatment centers. You know what? I want to go where they are, right? I want to go where they are, and there's a lot of need, let me tell you. There's a lot of need, all right? Page 90. Page 90. All right. I often get asked, how do I work with a new person? They're going to start right here on page 90 giving us some very specific direction on how to work with a new person. And you'll notice as we go through this chapter, though, that they don't give us any specific direction on how to take them through the steps. Okay? They tell us how to hook a newcomer. That's what they tell us how to do. Okay? Now, why don't they give us any specific direction on how to take them through the steps? Well, because they've already described that in the first six chapters, right? So they assume that we're going to take them through the steps exactly as they've described in the first six chapters. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So they're going to tell us, if once we find this person, what we should do with them. Okay? And our job is to do exactly the same thing that they've just talked to. It says, when you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about him. If he doesn't want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. I don't persuade anybody. Alcohol is the great convincer, remember? Alcohol. The only thing that convinces me that I need the steps, the sponsor, the meetings, all this stuff that we do here, is drinking. It's the only thing that can convince me, right? You couldn't convince me of anything. Your war stories never convinced me of anything. They just convinced me that you were stupid, right? Because I knew I was smarter than that, right? I knew that may happen to you, but it would never happen to a smart, hip, slick, cool guy like me, right? See, the only thing that convinces me is the suffering of active alcoholism. I want to point out something important, though, that we just read. Most of you probably read right over it. It says, when you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous. Note that it does not say when a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous finds you. What does that mean? It means that I need to be finding the new people. I need to be the one that goes up and reaches my hand out and says, hi there, I'm Rob Mason. I'm from Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to be the one that goes out and goes after those new people. They're sitting in the back of the meeting after the meeting. They don't know anybody, right? Remember, they're very ill, right? And they're probably uncomfortable. And they don't want to be here. They don't know anybody, right? Remember that feeling you had your first meeting? Okay. So my job is I must be the one looking for them. I must be the one reaching out to them. I probably said it already during this workshop, but, you know, one of the mistakes I used to make was saying, here's my phone number, call me. I don't do that. Not with somebody who's new. Okay? With somebody who's new, I say, let's exchange phone numbers. Right? And if they don't call me in a couple days, guess what? I call them. Sometimes that's all they need is a little bit of a push. Right? Just somebody to open that door just a little bit so they can walk through. Right? And say, hey, this is Rob Mason from Alcoholics Anonymous. We met the other night. Would you like to go to a meeting tonight? Right? Sometimes that's all they need is a little bit of an invitation to feel like they know one person in the fellowship, right? Think about that for a minute. So, the book says I'm supposed to try to find out all I can about them. This is what I call preliminary questioning, right? Preliminary questioning. I sit down, I find out about them. The book says we try to find out about their religious leanings, their background, their problems, not just their alcohol problem, their problems, right? So, we can see how we would like them to approach us if the tables were turned, right? How would I like... And this is a question I've often asked myself, is I try to be the type of sponsor I would like to have, right? How would I like them to approach me? So if you're sponsoring, okay, remember that sponsorship is a big responsibility, okay? And I take it as such. And you can ask the people that I sponsor. I take it as such, okay? It's a life and death errand, the book says. Okay? And I treat it as such. And if you're sponsoring people, you have an obligation and a responsibility that they're going to talk about on page 99, okay? Which we'll get to. Okay? But try to be the type of sponsor you'd like to have. So if you have a sponsor, would you like them to call you back? Well, then you should call the people you sponsor back. Would you like them to make time for you when they need you? Right? You see? To put myself in their shoes to see how I'd like them to approach me. Right? Next paragraph says, sometimes it's wise to wait till he goes on a binge. The family may object to this, but unless he's in dangerous physical condition, it's better to risk it. Don't deal with him when he is very drunk. That's a direction. Unless he's ugly and the family needs your help. Wait for the end of a spree or at least a lucid interval, then let his family or a friend ask him if he wants to quit for good and if he would go to any extreme to do so. If he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered. You should be described to him as one of a fellowship who, as a part of their own recovery, tries to help others and is glad to talk to him if he cares to see you. It goes on to say, once again, if he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. Neither should the family hysterically plead with him to do anything, nor should they try to tell him much about you. They should wait for the end of his next drinking bout. You might place this book where he can see it in the interval. Here, no specific rule can be given. The family must decide these things. But urge them not to be over anxious, for that might spoil matters. Let's jump down to the next paragraph. When your man is better, the doctor might suggest a visit for you. Though you have talked with the family, leave them out of the first discussion. Under these conditions, your prospect will see he's under no pressure. He could feel he He will feel that he can deal with you without being nagged by his family. Call on him while he is still jittery. He may be more receptive when depressed. Everybody highlight that. Why? Why? Why call on him when he is jittery, right? Because, well, let's keep your finger right there and turn to page 144. First paragraph down tells me why. We suggest you draw the book to the attention of the doctor who is to attend your patient during treatment. If the book is read, the moment the patient is able, while acutely depressed, the realization of his condition may come to him. I may realize in my depression, I may realize when I'm jittery and I'm in detox or I'm in the hospital, right? I may accept step one, right? I may accept the nature of my malady, right? As I said, I think one of the big mistakes that I've made and that I've seen made in Alcoholics Anonymous is we try to give somebody a little bit of time, right? Give you a little time before we work those steps, right? And what happens? They go to meetings. They start eating better. Start sleeping better. Start feeling better. And then you know what they say? They go, I don't need to do all that. I don't need to do all that, right? I'm feeling good. I'm looking good. And there's that cute girl at the meeting. Boy, I really like her, you know? And all of a sudden, they lose that sense of desperation, right? The gift of desperation, right? Which is why I push people right through these steps as fast as they can go, right? I push them right through while they're still depressed, while they still realize the desperation of their situation, right? And many of them have come back later and thanked me for that, right? And have said to me, if you had waited 3 months, I may not have done this. I may not have had the willingness to do it, right? Thank God that's what they did with me, right? All right. Page 91, last paragraph. We'll take a break here in a minute. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, saying nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he's in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades, get him to tell some of his. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest that you do this as we have done in the chapter on alcoholism, and that's chapter 3. Remember the examples they gave us? They gave us 4 examples. They gave us a man of 30 who was doing a great deal of spree drinking, right? And he was an exceptional man. He remained bone dry for 25 years. And then he got a great idea, didn't he? That his long period of dryety gave him the ability to drink like other people. And he was dead within 4 years, wasn't he? Then they gave us the example of Jim and Fred and the jaywalker, right? And they're saying that we suggest you describe that same mental obsession, that same insanity that they talk about in step 2, just like we did in the 3rd chapter, okay? And we all have stories like that, don't we? We all have stories. I have dozens of them, okay, of where I knew I couldn't drink, I knew I shouldn't drink, I knew that nothing good was going to happen if I did drink, but I drank, right? I convinced myself that this time it was going to be different, right? And to share with that new person from my own experience that obsession of mine, and I'm telling you, if they're an alcoholic, they'll go, holy cow, that is exactly what's been happening to me. It's exactly what's been happening. They'll understand you right away, immediately, right? And if they don't, maybe they're not one of us, right? Maybe they're not one of us. It goes on to say, let me see, where am I? Next paragraph. If you are satisfied that he's a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Going back to what I just said, if I'm convinced he's a real alcoholic, I may not be convinced. And I've worked with some people like that. I've talked to some people that have come up to me at these workshops and said, would you work with me? I say, sure, let's sit down and talk about it. And you know, and tell me about yourself. And they start talking about their drinking and, you know, well, you know, tell me a little bit about your symptoms. And I'll say to them, look, you know, just because you had a DUI doesn't necessarily mean you're an alcoholic, you know. Just, you know, if you don't have a physical allergy to alcohol that you can't control the amount you intend to take, and if you don't have an obsession of the mind that tells you this time it's going to be different, then maybe you're not like us, okay? That's up for you to decide, you know. That's up for them to decide, okay? But the book's very clear. If I believe that they're a real alcoholic, then I should dwell on the hopeless future of the malady, okay? There are some people that I have told, well, you know what? I don't know that you fit the description of the alcoholic that's in our book, okay, on page 21, okay? I don't know that you're that guy, you know. Perhaps it would be well for you to do some thinking about that, and if you still want me to take you through the steps, then I will, okay? And most of the time they don't call me back, right? Most of the time they don't call me back because they still got an answer, right? They still got an answer. It says, middle of that paragraph, don't at this stage refer to this book unless he's seen it and wishes to discuss it. This is one of the most misunderstood sentences in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? Don't refer to this book. And some people have said, well, it says right here, don't use the book. That's not what it says. It says don't refer to it. It says don't make references to it. That's what that means, okay? In other words, we don't say, if this guy's never seen the book Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't say, well, on page 62 it says thus, and on page 100 it says this, and on page 91 it says that, right? Why? Because they're not going to know what the hell you're talking about, right? But it goes on to say in the next paragraph, I don't have my book. I warned you. Sorry, guys. I lost my spot. All right, let's jump over to 94, and then we'll take a break. I knew there was something I wanted. Oh, you know, I'll catch it after the break. All right, top of page 94. Everybody highlight this or underline it. Outline the program of action. Explaining how you made a self-appraisal, straightened out your past, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and how you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part, life-sustaining part, in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain that he is under no obligation, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under any pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you've helped him. Second time they've stated that. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you've disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He'll be more likely to follow your suggestions. Top of that paragraph says, outline the program of action, right? In order for me to outline the program of action, I must know what the program of action is. I must know how to explain how to do the four-step inventory. I must know what we are trying to get down to the causes and conditions of in step five. I must know what to do in step six and seven. I must know how to write an eight-step list, right? I must know how to help them to go out and make their direct amends, okay? Keep your finger right there for a second and turn to page, where is it? 97. And then we're taking our break, I promise. There's an important idea here. An important idea. It says, never avoid these responsibilities. When should I avoid them?
Never.
Never. Okay? But. That's a conditional word. But be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Everybody underline that. I wonder what that means. I wonder why they found it important to put that in. You see, if I don't know enough about this program to explain it to you, okay, I'm not doing the right thing, am I? I can actually be of disservice rather than being of service. If I'm so busy with my job or my life and a brand new person wants me to work with them, okay, and I don't have the time to spend with them, okay, I must be sure that I'm doing the right thing. And I've had that experience. I've had the experience where new people that I've been working with at certain times in my life, by no desire of my own, I've just had too many things going on, and I have had to say to them, I think it would be better for you to work with someone else. Not because I don't want to, but because I knew that would, and that's a hard thing for alcoholics to do. It's a hard thing for us to do, because I must humble myself. I must admit that I'm not the one who has all the answers, right? If you're being sponsored by somebody, and I'll end this first session with this, and they don't have time for you, okay? And I went through that. I had a guy that was still a great man. You know, guy goes all over the world and speaks. But he's a busy guy, you know. And we made an agreement that I was going to call him at a certain time, and because of my work, I couldn't call him at that time. And I called him like a half an hour late, and I had some stuff going on, some serious stuff. My mom had cancer, okay? And he said, "You didn't call me at 6 o'clock," and hung up on me, okay? And I had to write him an email and say, "You know what? This just isn't working for me. I want to thank you. I want to thank you for being a great sponsor and for being a great servant in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I need something." And one of two things is going to happen if you do that. Okay? Either they're going to say, "Screw you," or they're going to say, "I wish you well." And either way, you'll know you've made the right decision. Right? Let's take a break.